This is Amarins. Hi, everybody. This is Arthur. Welcome to episode 23. It's Friday, July 6, 2007. Today I'm going to talk a bit about preparing for emergencies, which is basically a responsibility of every New Zealander. The title Get Through comes from a government information campaign called Get Ready, Get Through, which is designed to try to help people to prepare for emergencies, which, to some extent, is every person's responsibility. Now, New Zealand, of course, sits right on top of the Pacific Ring of Fire, which is the geologically active zone that surrounds the entire Pacific Ocean on every continent and every island that borders the region. The two islands, North Island and South Island, are technically moving away from each other, although obviously at a very slow rate. The South Island tends to be more susceptible to earthquake, and there are parts of it that have earthquakes every single day, lots of earthquakes every day, although most of them are far too light for anyone to actually feel. The North Island has both earthquake and volcanic activity. Now, most of the volcanic activity is fairly minor, spewing ash every few years. I mean, I think the last one was 96, if I remember correctly, and those sorts of things. But there is always the potential for something more to happen. Depending on who you listen to, Auckland City, it stands on the remains of 50 to 80 volcanic cones. Nobody knows for sure, because in the 19th century, a lot of them were flattened either to make room for development, or they were mined for scoria or something like that. Now, none of those volcanoes is ever going to come back to life. However, that doesn't mean that one might not pop up right next to where one used to be. And there have been various scenarios drawn up as to where they might happen and so on. The Auckland Museum has an excellent exhibit, I suppose you'd say, demonstrating graphically about what would happen if a volcano were to emerge out in the Hauraki Gulf, which is what Auckland Harbor opens out into. So it is a constant threat, and it is something that everyone has to be aware of. Now, technically, if there is a volcanic eruption, you wouldn't necessarily be evacuated immediately. And generally speaking, people are responsible for getting ash off the roofs, because volcanic ash becomes very heavy very quickly, especially if it becomes wet. So you want to get it off roofs as quickly as possible to keep buildings from collapsing and causing even more damage. And technically, people are supposed to get up on the roofs with a broom and sweep it off. Now, I don't know if there's any legal liability to do that. I mean, I can't imagine an 80-year-old getting up on the roof, for example. But it is something that one is to be aware of. More likely, however, is that people will be ordered to evacuate. Now, it could happen in the event of a volcanic eruption or an earthquake, or it can also happen because of flooding or some other weather-related event. And these are becoming more and more frequent. On Wednesday, the province of Taranaki, which is the southwesternmost area of the North Island, was hit by a tornado that did $1.5 million worth of damage. Now, this is a really significant event for New Zealand, because, generally speaking, tornadoes in New Zealand are fairly weak and fairly short-lasting. They are so small, in fact, that they tend to be called microbursts or mini-tornadoes or something along those lines. They just don't do very much. This one did. Next day, yesterday, Thursday, there were a whole bunch of them in the same area. Now, those weren't nearly as destructive as Wednesday's was, but they still knocked out power to about 7,000 homes and did some damage here and there. These are the sorts of things that can happen, but the tornadoes themselves have been, up until recently, relatively unusual. We've also been having a few more what they call weather bombs, which is what it really amounts to is a thunderstorm coming and stalling over a place and just dumping bucket loads of rain down on there. It could be the better part of a foot over a 24-hour period. Now, we've had at least two of those in the past. Since the year 2000, I'd say, we've had at least two of those in the general region here. And they can cause a severe amount of flooding. Now, the two most recent ones have happened, they were prepared enough with stop banks, which in the U.S. are usually called levees, that it stopped the rain or held the waters back, and there wasn't any severe problems. But in other areas, that's not necessarily the case. So everybody has to be prepared to evacuate even at a moment's notice. And toward that end, the government has launched this Get Ready, Get Through campaign. And the other day, we got in the mail a little leaflet and a checklist also came with it. But the front of it is actually really scary. It says, A disaster can strike at any time. Work through this checklist now with your family or household and keep it somewhere handy, such as in your Yellow Pages. I'm thinking, if there's an emergency, the last thing I'm going to be thinking about is the Yellow Pages. But anyway. Now, the checklist is a whole other matter again. First of all, there's what they call your getaway kit. And I'll just read some of the things you're supposed to make sure you have on it, such as family documents, by which they mean birth and marriage certificates, driver's licenses and passports, insurance policies, and family photos. And then also personal items, which includes towels, soap, toothbrush, sanitary items, and change of clothes. Now, I'm thinking to myself, if you don't have it pre-packed, how likely is it that you're going to even know where half of those things are, let alone be able to get to them in a hurry? Well, they recommend that you actually pre-pack some of this in like a little suitcase or whatever that you can grab and run if you have to. Now, there's also a list of emergency survival items that people are supposed to have, which includes bottled drinking water, at least 3 liters per person per day, water for washing and cooking, non-perishable food, canned or dried, and a can opener, which is always a good idea, a Primus or gas barbecue to cook in. Now, I have no idea what a Primus is, but there are a lot of varieties of gas barbecues, and we actually have a little stove that runs on a little aerosol can of propane. So we also have that as well. Our barbecue, of course, is also gas. And it tells you to check and replace food and water every 12 months, which is, of course, the other half of the battle. You get people to keep it, and then you've got to get them to change it. But other items they say you need to carry are waterproof torches and spare batteries, radio and spare batteries, first aid kit and essential medicines, toilet paper and larger rubbish bags for an emergency toilet. And that prospect doesn't appeal to me in the least, you know, using a rubbish bag. Face and dust masks, which is primarily in the event of volcanic eruption, but it could also be if, say, there was a forest fire or something like that, a bushfire. Pet supplies, blankets or sleeping bags, wind and rainproof clothing, strong shoes for outdoors, sun hats and sunscreen, because after all, you might be outside for quite a while. And then you're supposed to check the batteries every 3 months. And I'm thinking to myself, check them for what? I suppose to make sure they still work, I guess. And then, of course, you're also supposed to carry things for babies and small children if you have them, or other special items that you might need. But this flyer then has on the back this checklist that you're supposed to fill out as part of your emergency plan to decide where you're going to meet and how you're going to contact each other and all these sorts of things, because it's entirely possible that an event will happen during the day when people are separated and you have to have some way of getting back together. Now, like most people, our emergency preparedness is probably a bit lacking. The other day, as I've mentioned before, the power went out. This is actually when I was recording with Nigel. And we were reasonably prepared because we knew where the torches were and we knew where the candles were and all those sorts of things, so we were all right. But if it had been a bigger emergency, one where we would have had to have evacuated, we would have been a bit more strife. Now, the whole bit about storing water, storing 3 liters per person per day, that's a lot of water. And where do you keep all this stuff? I mean, we don't have the kind of storage space in our house to put it, and you don't want to put it in some place that has a lot of temperature fluctuation. You want it reasonably cool, especially for things like water. And we don't have anywhere to put it, really. I mean, I suppose we could invent something, and we probably eventually will. But in the short run, one of the things I did was in our freezer we have 2 drawers. And I filled up a 3-liter cleaned milk jug with water and put one in each drawer. Now, it wasn't just as part of our water supply. The main idea was that if there's a disaster and the power's out for several days, it will prolong the amount of time that we have to use up the food in the freezer before it all goes off. And then, of course, once the ice is all melted, we'll have the 3 liters each of water. So that was my thinking behind that. But we still need to get another, what would that be, another 12 liters of water somewhere to be readily accessible in the event that we were cut off completely from the town water supply, or that we were told not to use it, or what have you. Now, our cooking is all on LPG gas, which I think in America is usually called propane. And so if there was a power failure, we would still be able to cook. But even so, people are supposed to have gas barbecues or camp stoves and that sort of thing. And we have that as well. So we're all prepared for the bits and pieces, but just not necessarily all of the food or all of the water, and then certainly not all together in one place. And I'm not entirely sure how practical it is to keep it all in one place. Not for the average person, anyway. Now, this was recently highlighted, well, not that recently. It was highlighted a while back during the scare over the bird flu. and people, there were companies that were actually selling emergency kits and survival kits and so on with all of the bits and pieces already in it, which, you know, it's a good idea to have it that available. But again, you've got to store it somewhere. And the thing of it is, I think, that the average person doesn't think that there's going to be any need to worry about it, that the government will take care of them, even though the government consistently has said you have to be able to look after yourself for at least 3 days. And the thing is, at least is the part that's a bit worrying, because, you know, in a major emergency, say if a volcano were to go off in Auckland, or Wellington were to be flattened by an earthquake, it could take weeks for normal services to be restored, or months even in some cases. And how long can people reasonably be expected to look after themselves before somebody has to come and rescue them? Well, the short answer is at least 3 days. And it's something that people really do have to take more care about and to be more concerned about. Now, of course, I came from a place where the only real threat was from storms, potentially winter storms, especially ice storms, probably more so than blizzards, but potentially blizzards and also ice storms, and in the summertime, or the warmer weather anyway, from tornadoes. And those were the major threats. They were all weather-related, really. But as it happens, the strongest earthquake ever in the continental United States happened in along a fault that's called the New Madrid Fault, and it goes from southeast Missouri through underneath Memphis, Tennessee, and beyond. Now, it said it happened in 1826, and it said that the earthquake was strong enough to ring church bells, well, somewhere on the East Coast. The exact town varies depending on who tells it. And supposedly it woke Thomas Jefferson in his bed. Now, I don't know if any of those are true, because Jefferson died in 1826, but nevertheless, it is believed that that is the strongest earthquake ever in the continental United States. And the fault where that happened is still active, and it runs right underneath the sports stadium that was built in Memphis. Now, one day, that thing is going to give again, and you have to think to yourself, well, what's going to happen? I read somewhere that the wind resistance guidelines and restrictions for buildings in Chicago were more stringent than the earthquake resistance guidelines in San Francisco, and I personally think that's probably a load of rubbish, because earthquakes are a different phenomenon than wind. But I suppose one day we will find out whether it's actually us or future generations, who knows, because these things could happen tomorrow, they might not happen for 1,000 years, but an event of some sort is probably inevitable. But when I was living there, I never thought about it. I mean, I was vaguely aware of it. I mean, I first heard about the New Madrid Fault when I went to Southern Illinois University, because New Madrid isn't all that far from there, New Madrid, Missouri. So I knew about it, and I knew that it existed, and I knew about the story of the strength of the earthquake and so on. But I never really thought, oh, yeah, well, that's something I should be prepared about, because it could happen one day. So yeah, I pretty much went through life pretty blithely until I came to New Zealand and lived in a place where there's this constant threat of earthquake and volcano and all those sorts of things. And at first, I was like expecting an earthquake to go at any minute, not realizing, of course, that the earthquakes that you can feel are actually really pretty rare. Since I've been in New Zealand, I've only felt two, although one of them had an aftershock that other people did feel, and I didn't. Now, I blogged about the most recent one, but the other one happened when we were still in Pauro, and I remember I was sitting on the floor, and I felt this, like, rolling, and it just suddenly dawned on me that that was an earthquake. And it was the first one I'd ever experienced, and that was a good 9 years after I arrived in New Zealand, I'd say. It was probably more than that. It was probably about 9 years after I arrived in New Zealand before I felt my first earthquake. So clearly this isn't exactly as geologically active as it may have been made out to be. One of the nicknames for New Zealand is the Shaky Isles, and it does have frequent earthquakes, but there, as I say, they're not strong enough to be felt, generally speaking. I do have a link on my website if you want to see where the most recent activities are. It's on the right-hand side of my blog, down towards the bottom in the section of links about New Zealand. And of course, my blog is at amarins.blogspot.com. That's the gist of what I wanted to say about emergencies. I will put a link for the Get Ready, Get Through stuff on the show notes, so in case you want to have a look, you can go find them there. And but I will tell you, it's at getthrough, which is GETTHRU, one word, .govt.nz. And as I say, I'll try to remember to put a link in the show notes. Now, I don't really have much to say about the last episode. There was only the two comments. However, I had trouble posting that episode, and I had to do it twice. Now, I'm thinking that the problem has to do with a file name, because it has always had the number sign in it next to the episode. And that's always been fine up until episode before last. All of a sudden, there was an issue with it, and again, with this issue, because when I removed the number sign, it loaded fine. So I'm going to try to post them from now on without a number sign, and I'll know today if that worked or not. But that's my latest theory as to what went wrong. But it, as I said, it did take me two goes to get episode 22 posted. But in the comments for episode 23, Daniel said, "Oh, I haven't even heard the show yet, but I wanted to beat Archer to being the first to comment on an episode." And I said, "Congratulations. Because of my time zone, I often get to be the first to comment, especially on Archer's show, actually. And that's because during the normal part of the year, Archer posts his shows really, really early in the morning. But for me, it's, of course, late at night, so I can listen to it before I go to bed and then post a comment. Whereas other people might not get it until they get home from work, or they won't be able to comment until they get home from work, a few hours later. And Archer said, "Damn, Daniel beat me to it. Glad you enjoyed the Chardonnay. I'll have to look for it here in the States. I know it's around, I'm sure. I couldn't agree with you more about Bush and the Libby thing. Loved that song in the end. I hadn't heard that before." And I said, "Yeah, now I want to get another bottle. Just for scientific purposes, of course, to give it further evaluation. To me, the saddest thing about Bush's actions over Libby is that it's only one thing on a long, long list of misdeeds done by this administration, and it's far from the worst thing he's done. Bush has made me remember that song a lot of times." And in case you didn't listen to the end of that episode, it was basically a mashup by 37 Hertz, who I think is Dutch, if I remember correctly. Anyway, it's called Death of Democracy, and it takes a speech by Bush and rearranges it to give it an entirely different meaning. But it's one which I think is actually really quite appropriate. I meant to check before I started recording it, and unfortunately I forgot. But I did mean to point out that I now have 7 reviews on iTunes. Thank you, everyone, very much. When I do check from time to time, and I'm not checking... Let me rephrase that. When I check to see where I land when I search for Amarins, I find that I seem to be moving up a little bit. I'm still on the second page, and I probably always will be. But all the reviews do help. They, of course, downloads do too, obviously. But the reviews help me move up so that someday, if somebody in the U.S. searches Amarins, it'll be right there in the first page of search results, rather than them having to click on the thing that says podcasts and go looking for it. At least that's the goal. Now, a couple episodes back, I was talking a bit about censorship on iTunes, and I didn't want to mention one thing because I wasn't sure if I was right about it, but I have checked, and I am. And that's that I talked about using asterisks instead of letters to somehow obscure the name of songs. And the one that is most obvious, again, it's because I see it from searching Amarins. What happens is you get a return. The first list of returns is anything that starts with A-M-E-R-I. And actually, I don't ever recall seeing Amarins in that list, but anyway. And in the U.S. store, the first thing that comes up is America, F, asterisk, asterisk, K, yeah, from Team America. Now, if you do the same search in the U.K. store, that same song comes up first, but it says America, fuck yeah. It doesn't make you try to work out, I wonder what those asterisks are in place of. And that's the sort of thing I meant about the silly censorship. I don't really see the point of it. I don't get why eliminating, putting asterisks instead of two letters is going to make people not know what that word is. It's just, I don't know, it seems silly to me. But I mean, there are other things about iTunes that seem silly to me too, so why should that be any different? I also have meant to mention, or remind you, that I'm on Facebook and also on MySpace and Twitter, on Amarin's and all of those. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else, and there isn't. If you are on any of those networks, by all means, friend me. I almost always return friends. Sometimes I'm a bit slow because I don't go onto those services every day. But you might want to let me know who you are as well, just so I'm not thinking, who the heck is this that's friending me? Because I have gotten a couple of spam friend requests, I have to say. So I always do check out whoever's friending me, just to make sure that it's not spam. But be that as it may, if you are on spam, if you are on Facebook or MySpace or Twitter, by all means, friend me. At the moment, MySpace still has the biggest number of friends, followed by Twitter, I think, and then Facebook. Not that that really matters. It's not like it's a competition or anything, but yeah. And there are no new Frapper Mappers. If you haven't put your pin on my Frapper Map, by all means, do so. I don't have a theme song unlike QCast CT, which we are calling it now until we figure out what the CT will stand for. But speaking of podcasts, there was one thing I wanted to point out. Daniel on Call Box 7, Episode 7, had what he probably perceived as being little rants about the Democrats and so on. I personally didn't perceive it that way because I agreed with absolutely everything he was saying. And the thing of it is that I've personally been frustrated when I've tried to criticize the Democrats by people saying basically that I should leave them alone because they're not Republicans and it's more important to beat the Republicans. And I'm thinking, as I've said before, what's the difference if you have if you have Republicans and Republicans light? I mean, I'd rather have two distinct parties. But hey, that's just me. Right, last week I ended the episode with a Podsafe Music song, Death of Democracy. Now, in order to be able to download that to put that on my podcast, I had to register as a podcast producer and all this sort of thing, blah, 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 blah. And naturally, once you do that, it's only natural to start having a little poke around to see what else they've got. And that's where the little intro music came from, the music underneath the beginning of this podcast. It's by Nick Murray. It's also from the Podsafe Music Network. And at the end this week, I'm going to play a song by Springheel Jack's Original Swinging Jazz Band, which is quite a lot to say, really. I'm not entirely sure if I like it or not, I have to be honest, but once you give it a listen, you might have some vague idea of why I selected it. I'll just say that it was a result of doing a search on Podsafe Music Network, and it was actually the only song that came up to match my search criteria. So that's it for this week. By all means, leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or send an email to me at amarins@yahoo.com. That's it for this week. I'll talk to you Tuesday. Bye.
Sister, sister, don't be blue. Because it's all. Sister, don't stress out. So pretty soon we're getting out. And we're moving to New Zealand. So we could use a train to pass. We'll find some place where we can hide and see the world. Of mine.